Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 149. Caroline Hart helps you own and communicate your story. Here's a shout out to listeners in Douglasville, Georgia, Westport, Connecticut, Broomfield, Colorado, Mill Valley, California, Frankfort, Kentucky, and to listeners in Malaysia. With that, let's get started. Caroline Hart guides others in owning their story. She helps clients communicate clearly and consequently become better effective at leadership. She is the founder of Hart Communications, which is a communication consultancy that does cutting-edge work and has roots in authentic storytelling. She talks on her website about how you can take a journey in three steps. The three steps are: step out of your comfort zone, declutter your narratives, and then number three, nail it and own it. On her LinkedIn profile, one of her clients wrote the following: I started following Caroline's social media channels because she posted really funny and authentic content that resonated with me. When I needed sound communication advice, she became my go-to person. Walking me through my strengths and mission, she gave me the courage to talk about things that I didn't initially feel so comfortable with. Now I am really owning my story. If you want to own your story, talk to Caroline. Part 1, Walking Inside Your Story. In my research on leadership books, I discovered 7 principles. The second one, connect with others, is one of the crucial ones that people should know. When you connect with people, you build trust, and trust enables innovation, creativity, and engagement. Caroline shares a quotation that can lead you to build those connections with other people. Here's Caroline to explain.
I'm a huge fan of the work of Brené Brown, who is a social scientist and a vulnerability researcher, not an easy word, in Houston. Most of us are very familiar with her books and her TED Talks. In her book, Rising Strong, Brown mentions that how owning our stories is the key element to living a more fulfilled life. One of the most famous quotes actually really made a huge impact on me. It's when she says, you either walk inside your story and own it, or you stand outside your story and hustle for your worthiness. That really made an impact. This quote defines how I live my life, and it also happened to define my work and my coaching business. I'm being led by a purpose to guiding others, to guiding leaders to walk inside their story.
What does that mean to you when she says walk inside your story?
When Brené Brown uses the term own your story, so it is about possession and ownership, and it's also about being responsible. She means that rather than denying or avoiding to say that there are also parts of ourselves that we are not very proud of, we should take responsibility for them. So we should say, that's also part of me. It's important to be honest about the whole story, to be honest to yourself. That's what it's all about. And it's certainly very painful. But the good news is, and this is what I adapted to my consultancy, because of the fact that we take ownership of the story and of the narratives, we can do whatever we want to do with the story and with the narratives. So it means we can decide to make them spark more. It also means that we can decide to let go of them. We don't have to pay so much attention anymore, what random people think about it, because we are entitled to do so and not others.
What you just said reminds me of how people perceive other people. I'm thinking of more well-known people, especially with athletes. You see their incredible accomplishments when they win medals, when they break world records. You think this person is amazing, but you don't see all the work, all the hardships, all the setbacks, all the mistakes,
yes,
all the problems that lead up to that 1% or 5% of their work.
Exactly. That's really changing now. I think we are lucky to live in these times, right? In school times, I didn't have the capacity to even think about something like speaking about the so-called failure.
Yeah, I'm definitely hearing a lot more stories about people talking about the hardships of their development.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is wonderful is that even on this show, when someone comes on and they share a story, it's not a story of their accomplishments. It's a story about a mistake they made, a lesson that they learned. People can relate to those stories because they're going through them themselves. And those are usually the ones that are most helpful for people to hear.
Exactly. For our leadership discussions, or for our debates about leadership, it's so very important to be aware of the fact that you can lead better if you manage to gain trust by sharing and opening up about your story, about your leadership story, which means, yeah, being vulnerable, as you said. I want to know who you are. I want to know where you come from. I personally can only trust people who deserve my trust, and they need to share something about them. This is how we build trust, right? Not only with stories, but a big part of it is sharing personal stories. I really like to work on that with my clients. In my personal story, I noticed that I haven't lived my story. Maybe I can share a little bit of my story. So as a child, I was told that I would spend hours methodically cutting up magazine pages until only the crucial part of the pictures remained. This is also something I'm still doing. The scale may have changed, but it's still my mission, because I want to help my clients to communicate clearly who they are and why they matter. I didn't own my story for most of my life, which meant I wasn't aware of my strengths. I wasn't aware of who I am and why I matter for many reasons. The pivotal moment when I realized that really changed my life. I studied legal history and theory of law. Being also a minimalist from my nature, I never cared a lot about ownership of things, but I cared about ownerships of, well, let's call it non-fungible things like ideas and narratives. The concept of ownership has always been my favorite technical part of my law education.
Mm.
It didn't make a lot of sense back then because I didn't like to study law. I didn't like to work in law. I failed in terms of career standards. I didn't pursue a career in corporate. Despite of having a PhD in history of law, I didn't make a career in academics. I had a huge imposter syndrome about this big part of my career story, which was very sad. I always struggled to explain what I'm good at and what I'm passionate about it. Very, very late in my life, that changed with the help of this quote, I must say.
Take a minute or two and explain what imposter syndrome is. It sounds like something that your clients that you coach might actually struggle some with.
Oh, yes, they do. The so-called imposter syndrome means that you are actually afraid of being caught, of doing something illegal. So that's in terms of career language. People will find out that you are not right in your position or that you don't deserve the success. And the imposter syndrome is very common among people who are qualified and who are on a very high level of their education. And it's only today I found on LinkedIn a new KPMG study that the imposter syndrome is very, very common amongst female executives. I doubt it's only a female thing, but it's something definitely happening at a certain level of education. So speaking of of leaders, leaders who are my clients. I'm sure you knew that before, right? You're familiar with that.
I'm familiar with the concept, and I think it goes up across both genders as well. It seems to be a theme that has come up periodically on different podcasts, in articles, in papers. I would love to see the KPMG study that you referenced that you saw today. That would be awesome if I can share that in the show notes as well. It's almost like something that is so common, it's not talked about openly. If you do talk about it openly, then you put yourself at risk and make yourself really vulnerable.
Exactly. That's what leadership is all about, right? Not all about, but that's what we should do. Yeah, in the end, it can be very painful. We have to be brave to do that.
Speaking of the leadership principles, the one that was most commonly brought up in previous episodes is, and it's so simple, believe in others. When we do that, it actually helps people to believe in themselves. It's all about other people and bringing out their character and helping them develop and mature mentally, morally as well.
Yes.
Part two, from law to communications. Opportunities are all around us. Some of the times we find them on our own, but most of the time, people introduce opportunities to us. In this story, Caroline explains how she transitioned from working at a law firm to founding her own business consulting company. Here's Caroline with her story.
I wanted to tell the story how I went into communications. Somehow I survived my law studies. I wasn't very passionate about it. I felt sometimes that I was wasting my best years. And even if in the end, I managed to did a PhD in history of law. But still, it was a lot of hardship. And I ended up working as an academic researcher in a UK law firm in Germany, in Berlin. There, I tried to hide my poor talent for legal subjects or by my missing passion, better said. I hid it with a coping mechanism, I would call it, with my communications talent. So I was already in school. I was quite famous for being kind of Miss Chatterbox. Luckily, one of the partners in this law firm, he noticed that this coping mechanism was actually a strength, and he put me into the communications department, where I was really happy. Yeah, it was a career shift from misery to glory, I would call it. It was a turning point, and I got very passionate about the whole diversity and corporate social responsibility topics because it was a very, very cool and very progressive law firm. The challenge was at that time, it was 10 years ago, that the German lawyers, they did not consider it as super cool and progressive. What we did, what the London-based office created. In the end, I decided to leave the law firm environment, the corporate environment, and I became an entrepreneur. And I founded my own communications consultancy in 2010.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's amazing how your path changed because one of the partners recognized what you had to offer, as you described as an asset in communications, and move you to that department. And that sparked the whole passion about diversity, equity, inclusion, gender equality. And I think that's fantastic.
Looking back, it was good. Then, as I said, the German, they weren't ready yet. I mean, they're still not ready today. Imagine 10 years ago.
10 years ago, things were a lot different, and the diversity has started to pick up. And really, I think in the last 4 or 5 years, so the UK part was, I guess, ahead of their time.
Exactly. I'm a feminist, yes, from my education, from my what I've also learned in university. I attended one of the first lectures on feminist legal theory, imagine that, in Berlin. But the turning points in my career were clearly dominated by men who helped me and who saw my potential. Another turning point was in my career when I founded my own company. I was on a mission with my consulting agency to consult German lawyers on diversity and corporate social responsibility.
Oh, wow.
I think they totally didn't want to be consulted on. So it was, it wasn't a success in the end. But luckily, I had another turning point in my career. I met a wonderful entrepreneur who saw my potential in cutting long stories short, and he taught me to be a video producer. That happened really surprisingly spontaneously, because one day he scared the hell out of me when he could not come to the venue of a video production. I was involved with him. I assisted him, and he headed the whole thing over to me and telling me, you can do it. And I could. So I also became a visual storytelling expert, a corporate video producer. We did that for many years. I'm a relentless content creator until today. And this is what I really love about my job.
Part 3, How to Own Your Own Story. Caroline is the expert on helping people own their own story. What she shares with us next are steps that you can take to begin to own your own story. Again, here's Caroline.
I would like to share with our audience how to start owning your story, because actually it's not a one-off, it's a whole process. Here is what I recommend. Put a lot of effort first in understanding your so-called personal comfort zone. What do I mean with that? It is thinking about what is actually holding you back from clearly and strongly saying who you are and why you matter as a leader. Ask yourself, ask your mentors, ask your friends or family, also your shrink, whoever, read books about it. I strongly recommend all of the Brené Brown books, obviously, and also Glennon Doyle, Untamed. One of my favorites is also Mark Manson, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a... Maybe I can't say this on the podcast. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F-U-C-K. So just to name
can,
a few.
Yeah,
so
I can't say that.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F point. Literature to think about getting out of your comfort zone of finding excuses for not starting to be brave and start to daring to lead daringly with your own story. It means also to be ready for letting go of some people are very good at playing or victim or hero, and to start really allowing yourself to be human. What we said in the beginning. So if you are ready then to dare to lead and to make yourself vulnerable, you can do something on your own. You can start collecting the narratives about yourself. You can write them down and you can Google yourself, even if it's not always very pleasant. Something you can do either on the computer or on paper, depends on how you like to work. And then you read them. You read them one after the other. Try to understand how they make you feel. You don't put too much brain work in them. Just read it and decide if you like it. For example, in my case, it was like, do I like the sentence, I am a lawyer? I didn't like that, so I decluttered this narrative. Your gut feeling more or less will do the job. So you keep the good stuff. You get rid of the bad stuff according to your parameters. This is a work you do regardless of any target group, which is not easy. But once you got that, it can also be fun. It is not about personal branding. It's not about the market. It's just for you. Then I recommend to sleep a night over it or to regain the work after a week. And then you try to compose an about me, a boilerplate, a story about out of the remaining narratives. This is something you don't have to share necessarily with anyone. It's not a writing competition. You don't have to worry so much about how it sounds, how it's written. It is about being honest with yourself.
At the very beginning, you were talking about understanding your personal comfort zone, and it's when we're able to push outside of that comfort zone that the real learning begins. And it sounds like the whole process that you just described is a way of examining what you're comfortable with. And as you said, holding you back, as well as looking at the challenges to dare to move forward and operate outside of your comfort zone.
Exactly. It's about understanding how much you believe in, yeah, sometimes really stupid prejudices, narrative, also toxic narratives about yourself, if you are willing to let go of them. So just maybe to just give you an example from my work with my clients, many of my clients stick to narratives which might have been important before we arrived at this moment of change we are living now. So just to give you an example, being a generalist versus to being a specialist might have been something very relevant in certain jobs way back. But today, standards have changed, shifted. The whole work environment has changed. We don't live in times anymore where you stick to linear resumes, right? I encourage my clients to really think about it when they say, oh, unfortunately, I'm a generalist and not a specialist. This has a strong connotation of being not able to do anything properly. So I can never go into a leadership role or something like that. Sometimes it doesn't even make sense because the parameters have changed. This is something very important for the first step for thinking about your comfort zone, speaking about your comfort zone with other people who understand it.
My thanks to Caroline Hart. If you'd like to learn more about Caroline, go to the show notes. And if you have a question or comment, go to unlabeledleadership.com. Click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail message for up to 1 minute. I'd like to thank those who donate to the show. Your contributions makes a difference because this is an all-volunteer service. Thank you for listening. This is Gary DePaul. Until next time, lead on.